Mystic Fix, a program for the whole being, with Julia Gordon-Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Mystic Fix. I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. I'm an author, I'm a scholar of mysticism, and a professional tarot card reader. Today's episode, we're going to talk about the Sun card. This is a card of joy. It's well-timed with the summer solstice as it's just beginning for us here. It spotlights on celebrations and sometimes masculine energy because the sun is tied to the god Apollo. During COVID, I saw the sun card a lot as a problem, which would be in reverse, upside down as it faces me. I thought, why would this be a problem for almost everyone? And then I put it together that we get the word corona and coronavirus from the sun. Also interesting is the sun card is number 19 in the tarot, like COVID-19. So the universe is always giving me really interesting surprises and new things to learn. Today's spotlight is on paranormal investigations with Ryan Machman. And in part two, we'll talk with Jason Mankey about the sun's masculine energy and the horned god. For now, let's meet Ryan. Ryan Machman, I'm really happy to have you. I met you on Twitter, and you're a spirit communicator and paranormal investigator from San Antonio, Texas. So welcome to Mystic Fix.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me, Julia.
You bet. And so you've always been intrigued at the prospect of utilizing technology to converse with spirits. Now, I had an author maybe a few weeks ago, a little more than that, Peter Berbigal, who wrote a book called Strange Frequencies about just what you do and working with people who use all of these spirit boxes and various things. You were dissatisfied with the spirit box. And first of all, why don't you explain what a spirit box is?
Sure. Basically, it entails the use of either a physical, actual spirit box. A lot of times, those involve the use of hacked radio signals, AM and FM frequencies that are being swept at a fast rate of pace. That's one way to use a spirit box. Mm-hmm. Another way, and the one that I prefer, and the one that I use during my sessions is an application on my phone.
Okay.
And I've actually created that app, but I'll go into that a little bit more in a minute. But the app on the phone can either scan internet radio in the same way that they scan AM and FM frequencies on a physical spirit box.
Uh-huh.
Or sometimes they often pull from a bank of words.
Okay.
And you can probably already tell why that might be problematic, because there's a high chance of a false positive coming through. If you're using radio frequencies, it could be interview chatter, it could
sure.
be a song, it could be a whole lot of different things. And in the last couple of years, there have been a few pretty good spirit boxes that have come on the market that use phonetic sounds as opposed to actual human speech. I mean, it's still uh-huh. human speech, but it's just the phonetic sounds like that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
But even those don't work so well, I found, simply because there's not a lot of phonetic meat from which spirits can pull responses. You want to give them a lot to pull from.
It was explained to me by author Peter Berbigal that, spirits don't have mouths.
Right.
And so they have to kind of commandeer what we've already got in the air. That's how he, how he explained it. They sort of
And I agree with that. It's absolutely true. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So let's talk just for a second, a little bit more about what you do. I mean, when I found you, I would see all of these graveyard posts, basically, and you're walking through numerous graveyards and a lot of, mostly very old, right? I think you're not so much looking at the more recent burials. You're going back 100 years or more. And you'll throw out a question, or you'll ask, for something and listen. And depending on what gadget you have in your hands, and I know you've got hours and hours of these recordings, you get some pretty interesting things back. Let's listen to one of them.
In the honor of this.
Okay, you want me to call the light down for you now? Are we at that point? Okay, light, help. So you're at that point. You want me to...
hidden object.
What's it like for you when you're doing this? Do you have any sort of sensory feelings outside of this box that you're holding?
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes it hits me right at the beginning of the session. Sometimes it takes a little while for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But quite often I find it starts in my spine, believe it or not. It starts sort of in my lower spine and kind of crawls up.
Huh.
And it often seems to take my breath away just a little bit. I mean, I'm not out of breath, but there's a sense that it's a little bit of a struggle to start breathing. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. I think it might be, you know, spirits need energy to manifest.
Uh-huh.
And so they could potentially be pulling some energy from me in order to do that.
So do you think it's almost a kind of a possession?
I don't really
see it. Is that too big of a word?
I just see it as them taking a little bit of energy from me, what they need in order to communicate. It doesn't really feel like I'm being possessed. It just doesn't quite feel that way to me.
Yeah. So one of the things that interested me about your recordings is occasionally there's very dramatic, almost like music with these, you know.
Yeah,
like
it's sort of like a sing-songy kind of way they speak sometimes. And I can't quite figure out what that is or why it happens, because the device I'm using, which I helped build from the ground up with a friend of mine, does not include any music. Uh-huh. It doesn't include any of songs. It's basically a few millisecond long chopped up bits of speech that I've sampled from various sources, some in public places, some from TV, but they're just milliseconds long. They're not actual words, and there's no music at all. I would know because I was the guy who, you know, compiled all the recordings, but why that
so
is.
So the spirits have like this bank of samples is what you're saying.
Right. And it's approximately 30,000 at this point that they're pulling from.
Let's take a listen.
Live.
If you have a conversation with me, I'd appreciate it. Is it okay that I try to
right do now, we predict this present.
How interesting.
And
so I have to ask, have you ever used this outside of a graveyard?
Yes, I have. The reason I tend to go to graveyards is because it's mainly practical. When I'm there, there's a good chance I won't be disturbed by anybody else. You know, there's a lot of haunted places, a lot of active places like churches and hospitals and houses and whatnot. But telling everyone to clear out so that I can do a session can be kind of a challenge. So uh-huh. I find it a lot easier just to go to some place like a graveyard that's not heavily populated. There's not a good chance of someone coming to visit. And I can focus my energy, focus on the session, and go from there without any kind of, without being bothered, essentially.
Yeah. So let's talk about the different instruments you use. You've got a list here that you gave me, the paranormal music box called the Poltertune,
right.
An SLS Kinect camera, a teddy bear. why don't you talk about all of these?
Sure. Those are three of my most favorite ones. The one you've probably seen a couple of times on Twitter is the Poltertune, the music box.
Uh-huh.
And that is essentially, it's just like it sounds, it's a music box, just like an old school music box, but it has a sensor at the end with a motion detector beam, and it will only start chiming if something moves and breaks the beam in front of it.
Spirits are here. If there's one spirit, please chime it. Okay, are you a man? Are you the preacher?
So it's a really good trigger object. A lot of spirits seem drawn to the box. Maybe they grew up with music boxes. Maybe they're just intrigued at the idea of being able to manipulate something and make a song. But quite often I've seen other people use it. They'll put it, for example, in a room on a table or something, and then they'll walk out. And if it starts chiming, they'll come back in and do an investigation there. But I find The best use for it is as a yes or no trigger object. Well, I'll put it like on a tombstone, for example, and mm-hmm. I'll explain to the spirit how it works. And if they want to answer yes to my question, they can chime the box. If the answer is no, they don't chime the box. And I think a good example would be about a week ago. I was in Huntsville, Texas, at a prison cemetery. It's actually Captain Joe Byrd Prison Cemetery. And it's home to some rather unsavory people, one of whom is Henry Lee Lucas, the serial killer. Ooh. And I felt a definite energy at his grave. I placed the poultry tune down, explained how it worked. And I believe I captured about 5 minutes or so of an interaction with him, whereby I would ask a question. If his answer was yes, the box would chime. If his answer was no, it wouldn't chime. And that was quite something. That was probably the best example of me using that I've done so far.
So when you approach a spirit like that, a notorious person, in life anyway, do you think there's redemption for them on the other side? Do you think they have regret, or are they, do you still feel that they're still evil on the other side?
In the case of Henry Lee Lucas, based on how he was answering my questions, I did not get any kind of sense of remorse from him whatsoever.
Wow.
I feel that he believed he deserved to cross over. I don't think that he regretted anything that he did in life. He seemed proud and very narcissistic. Uh-huh. He seemed to gloat about what he's notorious for. So in that instance, no, I don't think so.
So he deserved to cross over. So he had not crossed over is what you're saying, right? Because sometimes you are actively crossing over some of these souls.
It sounds presumptuous for me to believe that, but so many spirits have told me that I could do it that I started trying to help them with that. And I've gotten some really fantastic validations. They've said that they see the light, they're going into the light.
Nice.
So my friends, can you give me a very clear validation today? Are you wanting to move into the light? Let me know. I want to do this for you.
Yeah.
A little bit more of that Poltertune session with the music box.
Specifically
light, exactly.
Ooh, I just got a chill. Yeah,
gives me a chill. When that comes through and I hear it in real time, I can't even describe the elation. It's so incredibly gratifying to hear that.
Yeah, I've heard others. I mean, I have not crossed anybody over. I haven't had that experience in my spiritual journey, but I've met many people who have. And I'm not one to, I'm open-minded, and just because I haven't had an experience doesn't mean I don't believe it's possible. So I'm very interested in that. And I've watched enough of your videos now that, you know, at first I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe that was said, or, you know, but after a few of them, you're like, that's pretty interesting. You know, that seems fairly legit. So yeah. Anyway, so you talked about the music box, the Poltertune. What is the SLS Connect camera?
Okay, that's a real interesting one. Are you familiar with the Xbox 360, the video game console that came out probably about, at this point, I guess it was around 2005, 2006?
My sons would be, but not so much me.
Okay, well, the thing with that console is, at the time, the Wii was very popular, the motion control sensors, and the Kinect was a peripheral for the Xbox 360 that was basically Microsoft's answer to the Wii motion controls. But the Kinect was essentially a camera that you would attach to the Xbox, and it would map out your motion. So you actually are the controller. You can wave your hand, you know, move your body, and it actually maps your body on the screen. So there's exercise programs, yoga, all sorts of.
Is this the thing with the dots that, that show stick figures and everything?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I've seen this on TV. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So you use that as well. I haven't seen any of your videos for that.
Yeah, I don't use that one quite as often. It's very cumbersome in the field. It's very top heavy. And frankly, I'm always afraid that it's going to break. But I captured some pretty cool stuff. One of which was in a mausoleum. I was doing a session in a mausoleum. I had the SLS camera up. And I captured an anthropomorphic figure sitting in one of the pews. I asked it to wave its hand, It did so on command. And at one point, it actually stepped off the pew and started walking towards me. And you could actually see the articulation of the hands and the feet. And it just sort of morphed into me, which was very interesting. And then it went away and I couldn't get it to come back. So,
are you ever frightened?
No, I really am not. I'm scared to death of ridiculous things like snakes and spiders, and, but it's not of spirits. And I guess that's good given what I do, or I would be a basket case by now.
You just reminded me of when my then 5-year-old son, Sam, he used to watch all the scary movies and he loved them. And then one day we watched Jaws and he couldn't sleep for a week. And he was like, that's because sharks are real.
That's right. Well, you know, what I told you is 100% true. I was scared to death of the movie Poltergeist. It gave me nightmares for weeks. But
interesting.
I actually credit that film to a small degree, at least, getting me interested in the paranormal.
Cool. What about the teddy bear? Why do you use a teddy bear?
Oh, okay. That was created by a company called Ghost Stop. They make some really fantastic equipment. And it's meant, I believe it's meant to be a trigger object mainly for child spirits. It's a teddy bear. It's called the Boo Buddy.
I love it.
It does several things. It can ask questions in a child's voice. Like, can you tell me your name? Can you count to 3? And then the idea is you might capture an EVP if you're using it for that purpose.
And an EVP is an electronic voice.
Phenomena, what? Exactly.
Now that's, phenomena, okay.
Yeah, and it's important to make that distinction. An EVP is not what I do. I do ITC, which stands for instrumental transcommunication.
Okay.
That's where you actually give the spirits the phonetic meat that they need, you know, the chopped up bits of human speech, the phonetic sounds.
Yeah.
Whereas with EVP, you're capturing disembodied voices from thin air. I have captured some EVP, but not nearly to the extent that I've done it with the ITC, and the results aren't nearly as long or impressive.
Now, Ryan, something I've seen on your videos is that these spirits will name themselves, and you'll be standing there and you'll look down and you'll see the name on the gravestone. I think that's so interesting. Let's listen to another one of those.
I remember this.
And for those who can't see the video, right after we hear that, you pan over to a gravestone that says Robert Best. Let's hear it one more time.
I remember this.
Which is just fascinating to me. So in this next clip, a spirit tells you his name is Alvin and then directs you to the German side of the cemetery.
Can you tell me your name?
Alvin.
Alvin. Okay. Is there an Alvin buried here?
German.
German, exactly. I know this is a predominantly German cemetery. My God, there's Alvin.
Well, if anyone should doubt you, I mean, first of all, I'd say they should go over to your Twitter, but and we'll post that. But you have won the Ghost Augustine's Worldwide Paranormal Evidence Contest, and you've received several prizes, including paranormal equipment and a congratulatory, I can say it, I was so tickled by it, congratulatory video from Ernie Hudson, who was Winston in Ghostbusters. That's so cool.
That was a big thrill for me, absolutely.
Sure, we all grew up with Ghostbusters.
And incidentally, I found out via social media today that this is International Ghostbusters Day. So,
all right, well timed. Yeah, and just we should note, this is not going to air today, but we are recording on June 8th, 2023. Okay. So, we'll be airing in a couple of weeks. Right. But Brian, so cool to talk to you, and tell us how people can reach out to you, and how to find you on Twitter as well.
Sure. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, anyone's welcome, as long as you're open-minded, and most people are so far. You can reach me at rmachman. That's rmachman. That's my handle. And I try to post one new ITC post every weekday. That's my goal. And I believe I've stuck to that for about a year and a half or so now. I don't think there's any duplication. It's a unique video every day. So
that's a lot. That's cool. And we will try to get one or two of them up on our video cast as well. And so listeners should definitely go over to the Mystic Fix video cast on YouTube for that. So Ryan, thank you so much for your time. Totally appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and I will see you on Twitter.
Well, thank you very much, Julia. I really had a great time.
That was paranormal investigator Ryan Machman. Coming up in part two of Mystic Fix, author Jason Mankey introduces us to the Horned God. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
Welcome back to Mystic Fix. The sun card in the tarot embodies the masculine energy of Apollo, among other things. And today we're uniting this energy with author Jason Mankey's fascinating work, The Horned God. Let's check it out. Jason Mankey, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Julia. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm delighted. And let me give you my little intro here. Jason Mankey is a third degree Gardnerian high priest and a popular speaker at witchcraft events across North America and Great Britain. He also writes for Witches and Pagans and Patheos Pagan. So welcome to Mystic Fix. Cool to meet you.
Really nice to meet you. As I told you before, I used to live in St. Louis and I went to South Dakota State. So it's like really exciting to talk to you.
That's so great to have that St. Louis connection. Yeah. So you have just put out this wonderful book, The Horned God of the Witches. And I thought maybe we would start with you just giving us a brief overview. I've noticed it's got history, it's got myth, it's got rituals, but tell us what it is and why you wrote it.
Well, there have always been horned and antlered gods throughout history. The most famous, of course, probably being the Greek god Pan, who had the horns of a goat. And then during the late Middle Ages, early modern period, you had the witch trials, and witches were always accused of worshiping Satan. Oftentimes that figure had horns on his head. Mm-hmm. When modern witches came forward in the early 1950s, they said that one of their gods was the Horned God, the ancient god of hunting and fertility in the natural world. So within pagan and witchcraft circles, the Horned God has always been here and has always been around, but he's never really had his own book to sort of look at his history. And that's what I tried to do with mine.
And so you're saying that the Horned God actually has many names, right? This is not just Pan or some of the others. I don't know.
It can be really confusing. It can be a title for particular deities like Pan. And then there's also sort of this idea of a bigger Horned God, perhaps encompassing many different deities. And people just say, hey, I worship the Horned God, or I honor the Horned God. And then there are others who say, well, I honor the Gaulish god Cernunnos, who is an antlered deity from France.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And so how did you go about researching and presenting this deity in your book?
I felt the call of the Horned God in the mid-1990s, and I got very interested in it. And I decided I would start reading all the mythology about Horned Gods and looking into the history of the Horned God. And I started doing workshops on the topic, really like lectures. It's not like it's hands-on where you do a bunch of stuff, but I would talk about the history of the Horned God beginning in the late 90s. So I'd been researching this for a very, very long time, and I started writing for Llewellyn Worldwide. I think The Horned God of the Witches is my seventh book for them. So they were comfortable with me as a writer for most of their history. All of their books have really been about goddesses.
Okay.
So having a book about a horned god was sort of a departure for them, but they trusted me to do it. And So I got to do that, but it's been an ongoing quest to learn as much as possible over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I wish I found you a few weeks ago. I'm aligning all of my episodes with a tarot card, and ideally you would have fit best with the devil, who of course has those horns. Yeah. But I'm actually aligning you with the Sun card. And the reason being, because the Sun has a lot of masculine energy, you know, you think of like the god Apollo and all of the ancients, they identified usually the Sun as masculine and the Moon as feminine and goddess energy. And I thought that would be kind of an interesting way, as well as the Sun card has the brick wall behind it, which is using all the elements. And there's just this idea of nature and sort of almost an innocent childishness and animal nature, animal joy. So it sort of felt right to me to put you with the Sun card. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, that's really great. So if you look at the history of Wiccan witchcraft, it's always sort of honored primarily a goddess and a god, the goddess associated with the moon, and then the right. god by default associated with the sun. And it's fine, I think, for horned gods to be cool. like gods too. So yeah, that works completely.
Yeah. So how do you think the horned god relates to that divine masculine idea?
You know, sometimes I try to get away from the gender binary in this day and mm-hmm. age. Mm-hmm. But just historically, the horned god was a deity often associated with hunting, which we often think of as a masculine pursuit. It's a god associated with wild places and the unknown, the primal forest kind of thing. And then uh-huh. also fertility, kind of that wild, panicked sexuality. And I think right. that coincides really well with the horned god. And especially too, when you think of like the male energy of the sun, I think that works with it too.
Uh-huh. What kind of misconceptions and misunderstandings do you think are around the horned god? Because I think, you know, any sort of fundamentalist Christian would look at this book and go, Satan, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's always the first thing, is we associate horns or antlers with the devil. In most mm-hmm. movies, when there's a bad guy, especially in like medieval times or in the ancient world, they're always going to have horns or antlers on their head. But at one point, horns and antlers were seen as really positive things. You'll see emperors on Roman coins who have the horns of a sheep or a ram on their heads. There's a famous statue of Moses where he has horns on his head. It's there because it's a mistranslation of something, but it's still there. So horns were not always associated with diabolical things. And yeah, it's always yeah. the biggest misconception. You know, there's witches often go, you know, we're not devil worshipers or whatever. But sometimes it's not totally true. There are some witches who kind of honor the folkloric ideas of the devil, not mm-hmm. a figure who sits in hell and judges people and tortures them for eternity, uh-huh. but more of kind of a trickster figure from British folklore uh-huh. mythology.
Yeah. But, you know, the horned god is so connected with nature, right?
Yeah.
And can you elaborate a little bit on that? You know, the caricature of Pan and some of those ideas?
When you think of horned gods, you think of the goat horns and you think of stag's antlers, primarily. Uh-huh. Those are animals who are right here. We have goats and we have deer and we have elk and we have all of these antlered and horned animals. So those horns put them intimately in touch with the earth. And very oftentimes how these gods were worshipped in the ancient world was very earthy in a sense. So Pan was not an Olympian. Pan lived on the earth. He ran around. He slept in a cave. He drank a lot. You know, physical, and that's really different from a deity like Zeus, who we think of as coming to earth as a golden rain or something, right? And
yeah,
it's just out there having a good time and running around.
Yeah, so Pan was basically Bacchus, right?
Yeah, well, Dionysus too, Bacchus, mm-hmm. he was sometimes depicted in the form of a bull, so he too okay. is kind of a horned god, and again, he's another deity who visited Earth and lived here and had relationships with human beings. And
yeah.
it's really different from a lot of the other gods of antiquity.
Right. So how does this archetype manifest in contemporary witchcraft today?
That's a really great question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. You know, I think that a lot of pagans and witches are really concerned about the natural world. And the horned god is very much a conduit to the natural world. A lot of how we talk about the horned god and gods like Pan in modern magical spaces has a lot to do with English poetry from the 19th century, when people became disconnected from the countryside. They were looking for a vehicle to put them in touch with rural spaces and green pastures and fields and things. And they chose Pan for whatever reason. And I think we still do that today. We're looking for a way to connect with the natural world. And we see this deity who has the horns of the natural world, sometimes Pan, especially goat legs and stuff running around the planet. And that's how we connect. And that's closer.
I have a personal interest in it because I'm a scholar of the poet Sylvia Plath, and I have a book coming out next year, The Occult Sylvia Plath. And Plath and her husband, Ted Hughes, periodically conjured Pan on the Ouija board.
Yep.
Pan would show up all the time and torment them in various ways.
It's really fascinating. Like from 1820 to 1920, Pan is the most written about deity in all of English literature. And before that, he had very much been an afterthought. But if you were a novelist or a poet, you were almost required by law, it felt like, to write about Pan in some way.
Why do you think? What's the attraction?
Well, I think there was a lot of change going on in the world at that time. So you had this shift from an agricultural rural society where 80% of people lived to a very industrial society. Within 100 years, you had this 80-20 shift. So it's very big, and, you know, don't have any problem with Jesus, but Jesus is not necessarily the best way to connect to the natural world. So people were looking for an alternative to that.
Sure.
And they found Pan for whatever reason, because when I think of gods of the English countryside, the Greek god Pan is the first thing that comes to mind. But every popular poet wrote about him, and it just sort of spread from there.
That's true. Yeah. Can you share any personal insight or experience, that has deepened your connection to this horned god idea?
Well, I think he makes his presence known to you when he wants you to know him. And I remember when I was first encountering the god Pan, it was this very insistent kind of knocking in my brain. He wanted me to like say his name. And I remember the moment that I said his name, I felt like kind of this power and this energy wash over me. And it changed me because I was for a very long time kind of shy and reserved. And I felt a lot of confidence when I said his name out loud, and I felt this power come over to me. And then, you know, with the rituals that we do, the horned god is a very frequent visitor, and we can feel his presence. And that presence, again, is a power that connects us to the natural world. You know, depending on the time of year, especially in the spring, it might make us a bit flirtatious, because I could feel that sort of sexual energy coming through. You know, he's a very real presence in the lives of my wife and I and the people that we do magical things with.
Yeah. And your book actually contains some rituals and spells and practices related to what, inviting this horn god energy into your life?
Yeah, I think that a book about the horn god is incomplete if it's just history. If it's something that you want to experience, there need to be ways into that experience. So I tried to write rituals that open doorways for those who are more curious about him.
Yeah.
Those are some of the things I'm proudest in the book. I feel like I'm a pretty decent ritual writer, and I think it comes
Oh yeah, the voice of the book is, you know, this is not dry. You know, you see some of these old grimoires and you're like, oh my God, you know, but it's very readable. How does the horn god, you know, we touched on the idea of goddesses, and how does it complement or intersect with the goddess centric ideas of witchcraft?
You know, I think they're very complementary towards each other. I think we need expressions of everything to really be complete, and to make sure everyone feels at home in a circle, to have a representative of everybody who's there, whether that's male, female, non-binary, trans, whatever. I think that my gods represent all of those different things.
Sure.
So I think his position there is important for us too. We also see him as a god of death, especially in the fall. And there's some historical precedent for that. The Gaulish Cronos is probably associated with death to some degree. We don't have any of his mythology, so it's sort of harder to phrase.
I think of the shedding of the antlers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, always on bucks, always on that kind of masculine, big energy. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jason. If somebody wanted to reach you, how can they find you? Do you do social networking and all of that?
I'm on everything, I think, out there. with the exception of Twitch, because I'm way too old for Twitch. But usually at Pan Mankey, and Google my name, Jason Mankey. There are only four of us in the United States. And
okay.
I come up first, much to the chagrin of the preacher with the same name. Oh, I feel sorry for that guy.
Well, I am delighted to say that Llewellyn is giving a copy of your book to one person in our audience who reaches out on the website. So we'll see who that turns out to be. But appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And it was a joy, and I can't wait to plow my way through this.
Yeah, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Don't go anywhere. In part three, we've got tarot card readings.
This is Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
Our spiritual journey tonight will begin.
Can't outrun your fate.
Let me tell you about you.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
Take a good look at these cards, young man. They contain all the secrets of the universe.
What does it say?
Hi, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim. It's Julia from Mystic Fix. What is your question for me today, please?
I just would like just a kind of a general overall, I guess, card pull to see what comes up for me.
Okay. Okay, Kim. So we begin with the Eight of Pentacles. This is a card of steady hard work. It's not terribly exciting, but you're getting it done. The next card is the Six of Wands, and this is a feeling of some success. So whatever you are steadily working toward, I do see it being a positive and having a positive outcome. And that's sooner rather than later. Like, I'm talking the next 1 to 3 months, it seems like you are feeling successful, like you have accomplished this thing, whatever it is. So I have the Emperor next, and that's also in that same time frame. And the Emperor is a card of the visionary, the planner, the person who's going forward and looking at the long range, the long-term plans. You seem to be in that sort of phase. Your top card for the year, and when I say the year, I'm talking about from now to this time next year, your top card is the Hanged Man. And the Hanged Man is a card of feeling a little bit stuck. So it's kind of a limbo. I like to point out in this card, he hangs from foot, not his neck. He's not dying. And he has this halo around his head. And the idea is he's becoming enlightened and he's learning in his stuckness. So as we go forward in the next 6 months, you do have the Two of Swords in reverse. Whatever's going on with you, Kim, it does seem like in this time of maybe deliberation and limbo with the Hangman, there's also worry with the Two of Swords in reverse. So it can be about just being afraid of wrong times, doing it wrong, being unprepared for things. There's quite a bit of tension. You have the Strength card in reverse, and I always like to say with the Strength card, no one gets the Strength card who is not very strong. But when it's in reverse, you are doubting your strength. You're not believing you are going to be able to pull this off, whatever this is. I want to assure you, you are, or you wouldn't get this card at all. I would be seeing failure of some kind. But it just looks like you're being tested, you're being challenged. And then we finish out with the Three of Pentacles. And the Three of Pentacles is a card of promises, commitment, signing contracts. It looks to me like a good year, but I feel that you are kind of hanging in there with something, whether this is work or sometimes it can be a relationship, although honestly it doesn't feel like a relationship. It feels more like work with your first card of the Eight of Pentacles. I think you are probably, you know, looking at something like retirement, looking at something you need to finish at work, and you're just not sure that it's going to happen this year or when it could possibly happen. So That's kind of what I'm seeing.
I think you're right on the money.
Okay.
So much.
Awesome. Thanks, Kim. Great talking to you.
You too. Take care.
Hello.
Hello. This is Julia from Mystic Fix. Is this Drew?
It is. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Drew. What question might you have for me today?
So my question today is regarding my living situation. I recently got on a fixed income.
Okay.
And I'm having a hard time finding housing, and I'm just kind of... Housing is a big deal.
Yeah, all right.
So I'm kind of crashing, doing a little couch hopping right now, but I would love to see if there's some stability upcoming for me in that area.
Let's take a look at your housing. So, dropped a card. Hold on. It was two cards, and whenever I drop cards, I do look at them, and I've got the Hermit and I've got Justice. So Justice is actually a really good card for housing because it's contracts and things like that. And the Hermit card is about, it can be about living alone, it can be about kind of other ways of independence. So it's, both of those cards are positive. But let's take a look. In the tarot, we have the Four of Wands, which tends to be a card of the home. And we also have the Ten of Pentacles and the Ten of Cups, which are very house and home and family centered. So it'll be interesting to see what turns up for you here.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. Well, that's a good sign already, those two popping out like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So I'm very happy to tell you that you do have a Ten of Pentacles here. and it's right side up, which is great. First, we begin with the Two of Wands in reverse. And this is a card of separating or leaving. So, of course, that makes sense. You're leaving wherever you live now and moving to this Ten of Pentacles, which feels like a blessing around the home. So that could not be better. What I do want to tell you, your central card is the Five of Cups, and this is a focus on the negative. So not everything is perfect about this house. It is a blessing. It's affordable. But you are noticing some things you don't like about it. It could be, you know, the right house in the wrong neighborhood. It could be, you know, that it just has, it's beautiful and it maybe is in the right neighborhood, but it has a lot of problems that, you know, have to be fixed.
Maybe an older place or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I am seeing you with the Three of Swords feeling some frustration or even heartache. But what I want to tell you is, try to let go of that. Your final card is the Empress. The Empress is blessed and abundant, and things are working out for her. So this is just a hiccup.
Okay.
I'm going to add cards to, so I'm looking at this Ten of Pentacles with some more detail. I don't think you're going to stay there forever. It's a place until you get the place, okay? The Eight of Cups is over it, which is just telling me you will be putting that in your past. And at the root of this is the Ten of Cups in reverse. I did say the Ten of Cups is one of those housing cards. And this is just saying it is not your happy home. It's a very transitional, temporary place that you're in until you find the place. So I have the Five of Wands, which is saying it is a fierce market. It is going to take you a while.
And it is.
Yeah.
It is. I'm looking in Sacramento, and it's just nuts there right now.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. And the Seven of Wands in reverse tells me that you are inclined to feel overwhelmed about this. But I would really like you to just focus on Spirit will take care of me, and Spirit will lead me to the right place. And I've got my mind open and my heart open, and we'll make this happen. And
that's beautiful. Because fear can drive stuff away from you sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And if I could give you a little homework, I would love you to print out a picture of the Empress tarot card if you don't have a tarot deck of your own.
Oh, my gosh. And that's my card because my birthday is 3-3.
Oh, perfect.
That's always been my card. So
the Empress is number 3.
That's a sign it's going to be okay.
Yeah. So I would like you to just kind of look at her and meditate on her. And know that you are creating that abundance, and your blessings are blessings to the world, and your happiness is a gift to everyone around you, and your home is a part of that. Okay.
Thank you so much. That
You're
just
welcome.
Gives me the little like
boost of hope that I was hoping to get today.
Oh, I'm so glad. Do you ever wonder about some of the more personal tarot card readings I do? The ones you don't see or listen to here? The affairs, the swindles, even the murders that have shown up in the cards? Then you might be interested in my forthcoming book, Tarot Life Lessons, available for pre-order right now on Amazon.com. Learn what it's like to be a professional tarot card reader from the stories from my journals. It'll also help you if you're looking to read tarot cards for yourself. Tarot Life Lessons will be published and available November 7th with Destiny Books, but you can pre-order it now. I want to leave you with one word, comma flight. This is our 20th program of Mystic Fix, and Comma Flight is responsible for all of it. We would not be here without them. I don't know if you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but Comma Flight is this amazing acro yoga experience. It must be seen to be believed. Check them out on their Instagram profile at KAMAFLIGHT. You'll see all kinds of videos and learn how you can experience it at the Chosen Retreat Center in Sebastian, Florida. Until then, thank you, everybody, especially thanks to our guests, Ryan Mockman and Justin Mankey. If you would like to be on the program to get a free tarot card reading or to get a free book giveaway, register at mysticfix.com. Until then, see you next week.